You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
This is The Conversation. My name is Adam, and I am excited that you are tuning in today. I am excited that you are listening in, and I just want to give you a huge high five right now, a fist bump, because you have officially survived Election Day. And I'm obviously recording this before Election Day, so I have no idea of what the results are. There's a high chance we have no idea what the results are, but either way, a high five to you. You survived Election Day. Just to let you know, God is still in control. I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this, that the sun did in fact come up today, regardless of whether or not your candidate won, or it looks like your candidate is going to win. God is still in control. My honest hope for all of us is that we can start to unite again. And I know that just because Election Day is come and gone doesn't mean we're all going to go sing Kumbaya together, but hopefully we can take some steps to begin to unite. Not even as a country, I'm talking about as families and friends. I talked to a buddy of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he said he's legitimately not talked to his best friend for a month and a half because they cannot be in the same room without talking about politics, and they're very different politically. And so more than our country, we love to talk about our country. I'm talking about you and I. I hope that you and I, and the people in our sphere of influence and in our circles and friendships, that we can begin to unite again. Because we need it now more than ever. So be encouraged by that. Today, I was honestly going to try to sit down with some people, like a Democrat and Republican, and talk a whole bunch of politics and whatever else. And I was just like, actually, I think right now that everybody's maybe sick of politics. And so I thought instead, why not talk about dating? Let's just talk about dating. I legitimately went back and forth, and I'm like, I think I'm just going to not talk about politics. I'm sick of talking about politics. I'm tired of hearing about politics. So today we are going to talk about dating. I sat down with one of the best, Kate Warman, and Kate is fantastic. She's amazing. Kind of the focus and really the heartbeat that she has is to talk to the single crowd, to talk about dating, to talk about relationships in general, to talk about being a healthy person. And I only wish that I could have heard this episode when I was single. And so if you are single, I think this is going to bless you big time. I think it's going to encourage you. Kate does not sugarcoat anything. If you have a friend, a close friend who's single, you can share it with them. That might be a little awkward. Obviously, use some discretion on just randomly sharing it with all kinds of single people. But it is an awesome conversation. And so we don't talk about politics at all. So this will be a safe, politics-free episode if you are sick of politics. But as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I am here with speaker, with podcaster, with new author. Kate, just want to welcome you to the podcast today. So excited to sit down with you. Genuinely can't say that strongly enough.
Oh, Adam, thank you so much for having me on today. Love your heart and your spirit. And just starting our conversation before we even hit record, I was like, I already just feel so thankful and happy to be talking to you today.
And we have, I feel like we have to give a shout out to a mutual friend, Sarah Kurtenbach.
My gosh. She is one of my favorite human beings and one of my very best friends. I don't think I've met a soul that has not said that they like Sarah Kurtenbach. You know, she is just one of the most enjoyable, wonderful souls I think ever.
Yes. Well, what I love about her, she's so dynamic. Mm-hmm. She's a part of our leadership here at the church. She's so dynamic. She's so wise. She's so encouraging. Like, she will see something and she won't just flatter a person and use kind of her words, whatever. Instead, she'll get really specific about things that she loves and notices. And she just has a way of raising people up. So I had to mention her before we get into things. Kate, if you just want to share
I'd just love to hear your story. I honestly am new to that. We're on the same podcast network, so we have that connection and relationship. But I just love to hear your story, even kind of original hometown, what your parents do. How did you end up to where you're at right now?
Oh, man. Okay. So I'm long-winded. So I will start by saying I'm going to try to compartmentalize the SparkNotes version. I recently was dating a guy, and we'll go into some dating stuff, who I was like, oh, I have a story to share with you because my StrengthsFinder, one of them is storytelling. And he was like, the story sounds great, but can you give me the SparkNotes version? And I was like, why? He's like, I don't think I need the full-blown thing. Okay. So I've been working on providing SparkNotes versions of stories because otherwise we're going to be here for an hour, you know? So I am Kate Warman and I currently live in LA. I am a speaker, a podcaster, like you just said. I run The Heart of Dating, which is a business now. It's a ministry, but it started with a podcast on dating, Christian dating. And my story has hugely to do with my story and testimony in dating and healing from all of that. But people get confused when they ask me where I'm from because I'm kind of from all over the place. I was born in Canada, grew up mainly in Connecticut, did a brief bit of time in Ohio, and then moved my way down to Texas, where now my family has been for over 11 years. They're in Texas. Texas is my home, but I can't claim true Texan citizenship, whatever you want to call it. There's Texas pride all over the place.
There is.
So I did not grow up in Texas. I don't have a Texas accent, but I love Texas. So my parents live out there. My brother lives out there. My parents are not together. That is part of my story, but they're all in Texas. So I, right now, though, have made my way out to sunny California, like I said, and I got to say, I love it out here, just the lifestyle. It is beautiful. And speaking of Sarah Kurtenbach, I met her in between Texas and LA when I lived in New York City. So I've kind of lived all around. And I will say this about my story. Something that to note about my story specifically is that I am an Enneagram 3 and a huge, same with you, right?
Same with me. Same
all
here.
All over the place. I wish I had known this fact many years ago because
yes.
It has opened my eyes to just a plethora of realizations that I felt so seen when I read my results. And I was like, oh man, how did this test result go into the archives of my life and spit out all of my tendencies? Like what? What just happened here?
true story. I once went my very first time I went to see a counselor. I look back now and I basically went to see a counselor because of the 3 in me.
Oh my God.
I didn't have words then. Like I thought like something is wrong with like how I'm wired. And literally after like 30 minutes of sharing, he just finally said like, is this the reason that you're here? Like this is it. And I'm like, yeah, like something's wrong with me. And now I'm like, I was just a 3 in need of realizing that. So keep going.
Of course. You're just like, I need to process this performance mentality that I have, my hustle and my hurry. So starting from a young age, I was definitely the performer. I sought validation. And to be honest, my parents had a difficult marriage. And because of that, they were dealing through a lot. And I noticed that you pick up on things subconsciously as a child. Yes. And the way I decided to try to be seen was I tried to be the best at everything. I was the best in school. I was the first chair flautist. I tried every sport to be the best of every sport. I was, you know, the yearbook editor in high school. And just whatever it was, I was the lead of that, or I tried to be the lead of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, in seeking and looking back at that, it was because I really just wanted that validation and affirmation specifically from my parents. But then you take that and transform it and relate it to the area of men and dating and guys. And I had a special affinity for needing affirmation from male type people, for males in my life. And so it started at an early age. I was really crazy about boys. Moving into high school, starting at the age of 13, I started kind of dating and my parents allowed it. You know, I don't know what I'm going to be doing for my child, but it was an early age to start dating and very awkward to have your parents drop you off at the movies. Just weird situations. But
Mom and Dad, we love you. We love
you. Yeah, we love you. Awesome. Love you guys for dealing with all my dating antics. So Adam, it didn't take long for me to start becoming a serial dater. From 14 to 24, I was not single at all. So I had a slew of boyfriends. In fact, between the ages of 15 and 16, I remember having 16 boyfriends that year. I just like flew through boyfriends, and all of that journey, I just needed that validation from guys. And once I got it from one, I would move on to the next. And it was just a pattern of, I needed that. And this process led me to, in my early 20s, being in another relationship. And unfortunately, that relationship ended up being horrifically abusive in every area of abuse that there is. So it was spiritually abusive, mentally, emotionally, physically abusive. It did end up being physically abusive, and it was sexually abusive. So I was in that relationship for about 2.5 years and warped into the cycle of abuse. And for anyone listening, there were things that were happening, such as gaslighting, where you start believing that you are crazy because the person uses this tactic of telling you, when you're saying, hey, this is wrong, or hey, you shouldn't be doing that to me, they basically flip it on you and they make it all about you. Well, you're actually making that up, or they discount you, or they kind of deflect it, or you did this, so actually you're in the wrong, or they continually pin it back on you. And whereas you can have full on proof that what they're doing is wrong, they warp you into this cycle. There's a lot of emotions, and they continually put it back on you over time, so much so that you start questioning your own sanity in a way. Yeah. You don't realize, oh my gosh, you don't realize that the person's in the wrong. You start thinking that you're in the wrong, and you start missing all the things that they're doing because you just start blaming yourself. And so it keeps you hidden. It keeps you small, and it allows for other abuse, such as physical abuse, to start happening. And that was my story for 2.5 years. It took a very long time to get out of that relationship. And it's a longer story. So again, trying to keep the spark notes. After that, I was in a low place, Adam. I didn't love myself. I had lied to friends and family for a long time. And I had broken bridges with a lot of people because I just was so stuck in this cycle of relationship. I so badly wanted it to work. I had put all my value into this person who was never going to change for the relationship or for me, right? And it took a lot to get me out of that relationship. And it was at that point, after that relationship, I was in what I want to say, quote, Anne of Green Gables, I was in the depths of despair. And I find that funny to say, but it truly, I was in a dark place. I did not like myself. I felt so much shame. I felt hidden and small. I felt that it was not safe to talk to anyone. And it was in that moment that I started reflecting and realizing, for 10 years, I have been dating. For 10 years, I've been with a person and having that person telling me who my identity was, only to end in the most abusive relationship I've ever been in. And I had this moment of recognizing, I have no idea who Kate is. I have no idea who she is. And so I embarked on a season and a journey of removing dating from my life, of coming to God and saying, Lord, I honestly thought that I knew you and I thought that I knew who I was, but I honestly don't think I really knew either one. And so if you'll have me, which of course he always will, right? We don't even have to ask that. He wants us, he wants to be with us. He is with us and for us all the time. But I was like, if you'll have me, please just show me the way. I need help. I need guidance. I need to rebuild what has been broken for the last 10 years. So I went on this journey of singleness and no dating, absence of dating. And I went to therapy. I spoke to spiritual mentors and did just this whole process of healing, rediscovering who I was. Yeah. And brings me to a few years later, I moved to LA and I started wanting to date the right way. Okay. And so this brings me to the end of my testimony and
this
story.
This is so good. You just keep going. I mean it. You just keep going.
Thank Thanks, Adam. There's a lot of details in here, but I wanted to date the right way. And this is where it led me to say, you know what? I'm going to do it differently this time, right? Like, it didn't go so well in the past.
Yeah.
And so I started researching, reading, finding any book I possibly could on dating. I started researching pastors and sermons that talked about dating. I tried to get just as much knowledge as I could. The Enneagram 3 in me was like, I need to know everything so that I can do this and perform well this time, right?
Yeah.
But what I realized was that there weren't a ton of sources out there. And the Bible talks so much beautifully about marriage, about relationships in general, and about singleness, but it doesn't explicitly talk about dating. And that's what makes it so hard, because it is this new concept in the last 100 years that we've come to form. And I'm sure we're all grateful for it in one sense, that we don't have arranged marriages, that we have the choice to of who we marry. But at the same time, it means there's a lot of weird nuances, a lot of gray area, and we need guidance and direction. Christian singles have no idea what we're doing. And we get lots of influences from external things, such as movies, such as social media, reality TV. And there's a lot of things telling us what romance, what dating, what relationships should look like. And a lot of them are giving a lot of bad advice. Okay. And so, so I went on this journey of trying to date differently. And it basically led me to having God put on my heart that he wanted me to start a podcast. And when I prayed about what it was going to be about, God was like, I want it to be on dating. And I got to tell you, Adam, I basically almost had a panic attack because I was like, are you for real? I have just spent, you know, at this point, 13, 14 years of this journey, and a lot of my story I never wanted to share publicly. And then I feel like God's telling me, no, I want you as a single woman, still dating, still single, not married, to start a podcast on dating. Lots of fears, lots of hesitation. But when I really pressed in, I was like, God, why me? Why do you want me, a single person, to start this? I really felt God say, Kate, if not you, who? I have healed you. I have brought you this far. Your story is not for nothing. I want to use this so that people feel seen, feel heard, feel loved, feel understood. And you don't have to be perfect. I don't expect you to be perfect. I don't expect you to have it all together when it comes to dating, but I will guide you and I will lead the way. And I want you to step up. There's something in your story that's going to help people. And you yourself are going to learn so much on the way. So honestly, Adam, that's what I did. That's how Heart of Dating was birthed. And if you can't tell by what I'm sharing now, I'm so passionate about dating, about relationships, about healing in all areas of our life. And so I just love what I get to do today. And I can't believe I get to do it, because I never would have thought that this is what I was going to be doing a few years ago. I never thought, but I'm so thankful. So
that's so cool. Kate, like I said this before coming on, thanks for speaking up for a group of people who I feel like are often overlooked, specifically within the church. I feel like it's hard to be single in the church. Like it's just like, hey, Kate, all the analogies, and I'm guilty as this too, are about the pastor's kids and spouse, and that's great. What about this? Like, what about analogies for me? You know, it's like, well, they're just this group that if you put too much energy in, they'll get married and then they'll disappear anyways. Like, I mean, there's just all these things around it that are just like, it's almost a setup to feel really alone. And I think because of that, the church, the place that you should belong, regardless of who you are, kind of adds to like, you need to find somebody right now, even if it's not a good somebody, even if it's an unhealthy somebody, even if it's just like wrong and ask, like, just be with somebody, because otherwise you're weird. And like, you know, I just want to thank you again just for being that voice. There's so many questions that I want to ask you. So the right way, like, so how do you date the right way? Because like you said, dating virtually does not show up in the Bible. And so it's like, how do I do this? How do I do it the right way? And specifically, maybe talk to that person who, like you, is maybe like not done it the right way and almost feels like it's too late to do it the right way. You know, like I've already kind of like this. Yeah. Like how do you do it the right way? Like, just go for that.
Yeah. You know, the first way I'll answer that question is there is no one right way, right? I think that's the fun part of the journey of dating, is that every person's story is so unique. And yes, some people go on one date and they know on the first date, this is going to be my person, and they end up marrying that person. Yeah. But that is not everybody's testimony. You know, some people thought on the first date, this is probably not my person, and they ended up with that person and they have a thriving relationship. You know, some people had early conflict and had to work through a lot of things. Some people had zero conflict. And so everybody's journey story is so, so, so different. And I like to say that first, because that's, we are so striving good here to not be perfect in this area of dating, but perfectible, knowing that we are each different, each unique, and each bring unique things to dating, as in who we are, as well as our past and things that affect us and triggers and things like that. And so, but what I will say is this, especially for somebody who is like me, and this is what I do when I coach people individually, you know, they come to me and they're like, Kate, I need help with my dating life. I'm like, great, I hear you. But I like to clarify that I'm not just trying to be Will Smith Hitch over here. You know, I'm not just going to try to force you or get you the person that you're going to marry right away. And in fact, I think that would be detrimental. I think the first thing that we have to do is, relationships are not just about our relationship with another person, aka our relationship with our significant other one day. It is first and foremost your relationship with God. So if there is healing that needs to be done, or if you are recognizing that maybe this has not gone so well for you in the past, we need to relook at what your relationship with God is like. You know, where are you drawing your identity from? Is it from validation, external sources, from what a man says about you or a woman says about you? If they reject you or don't reject you, does that make you feel better if they accept you, tell you you're beautiful or handsome or whatever? It's okay to feel good, but it's just, if our identity and our confidence is coming from that person accepting us, we're, our identity is rooted in the approval of others, right? So where is our true identity coming from? A lot of times we say, God loves me. I know God loves me. But I think there's often a miss, because I think we say it verbally, like we know it in our head. That's true. It's all throughout scripture. And I think we can regurgitate a lot of what scripture says. Yeah. But I want to know that you believe that in your heart, that it goes from your head to your heart, and that you're walking out that I know that God loves me. I know it, because if there is an area of life where I don't feel that loved, I am wrestling through that with God. I am seeking healing in that area. I'm asking God to fill me with love, to show me truth in that area about myself. And that's first. What is your relationship with God like? And to, do you truly walk out with, and this is going to sound like a Christianese word, but godly confidence? Do you have godly confidence in who you are? Because if you do, you can show up in dating not as fearful of if that person is going to accept you or reject you, right? Because you know your worthiness, and it's not attached to whether or not you get married or whether or not you don't get asked out. So let's start with your God relationship. The second relationship that you have to analyze in order to really walk out dating healthily is then your relationship with yourself. And you know, how are you talking about yourself to yourself? I think that we are sometimes the worst bully in our own lives. And, you know, we don't need an external bully to be mean to us. We are our own worst enemy in ways. Yes. Like the way we berate ourselves internally, the way we talk about ourselves. If I said some of the things I say to myself to somebody else about someone else, like, they would be so offended, right? But we say it to ourselves all the time. We tell ourselves we're not pretty enough, that someone's not going to like us. We shame ourselves. We use shaming language. And we really need to get our own relationship with ourselves right.
So good.
And we do, part of that is, of course, finding balance for ourselves. I used to hustle. I used to hurry. I need to find ways to connect with myself, because part of this journey is knowing who you are, knowing what you have to bring to a relationship, knowing what your strengths are, your passions are. You need to know that about yourself. If someone is asking you, like, who are you, or what makes you unique? What does make you unique? I think we don't know that often about ourselves, and we need to spend time, you know, really taking care of the personhood of ourselves. And then, of course, the third bucket is relationships. But I believe that if we really get a strong relationship with God, find that godly confidence, know from our head to our heart that we are so loved, and then that we also have a healthy relationship with ourselves. We enjoy being around ourselves. We enjoy who we are. If those things are true, we can walk into a dating relationship that much more whole already. Because I say this, dating is not two half people coming together to create a whole person. That is a myth. That is a Jerry Maguire, you complete me sort of stuff. And I'm not about that, because we don't need some person to make us complete. We are whole in Christ. So I want to make sure that that wholeness is strong, solidified, that I'm walking out in purpose, that I have kingdom mission, that I truly know my DNA from the inside out. Read Psalm 139. It's a love letter about who we are. You know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. We need to be able to walk that out as a whole person. And then we can join forces with another whole person. So now this is not an easy process, but that would just be some of my basic initial advice to say, don't rush into dating. Don't do it. I mean, dating will teach you a lot, but really work on that God relationship, your self relationship. And if you are noticing that you are too heartbroken, too rejected, that you get in relationships that are bad over and over again, then you need to really work on those two buckets first. That's what I would say.
Kate, oh my gosh, you're fire. Seriously. Everything you said was so good. One of the things that we've been talking about as a team here a lot, one of the people who helps me with our messages, we've really been talking a lot lately about being emotionally healthy. Like, I feel like that's a part of discipleship, to use a God, like, church word, that totally gets left out. It's like, so I know 100%. A bunch of Bible verses, but I haven't dealt with all this garbage in me. You know, like, I love Jesus, but I got a lot of bitterness and jadedness and deception in my soul. And I think regardless of what it is, those two relationships with God and also a self are so, so critical.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Hey, today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Faithful Counseling. So let's get real for a second. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I know for many of us that can be anxiety, depression, fear, or even broken relationships. These are all things that can be holding us back. But this is where Faithful Counseling comes in. Faithful Counseling is a worldwide counseling service that is making professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient so anyone and everyone can face life's challenges and get help anytime, anywhere. Faithful Counseling offers four different ways that you can connect with a licensed counselor. You can sit down for video calls, phone calls, live chats, or instant messaging. Every counselor on Faithful Counseling is licensed by their respective state board and has over 3,000 hours of experience. If you think Faithful Counseling is for you, you can sign up today and be matched with your counselor in 24 hours or less. Faithful Counseling is helping us live our healthiest lives in the comfort and safety of our own homes. Be sure to check out Faithful Counseling at faithfulcounseling.com/theconversation. And now back to today's show.
I have so many questions to ask you. So I got those first two things. Like, I'm working on those things. Like, I'm healthy. I have a good relationship with God, with myself. I do want to meet somebody. How do I meet somebody?
So Adam, this is such a great question. And I'm not going to lie, this is the question I get all the time. So where do I meet people? How do I meet people, right? I think as Christians, I'm just going to say it right now, we are incredibly awkward when it comes to this. And I do just want to make a side note that we over-spiritualize this process so much. And we think that in order to go out with somebody, in order to even consider dating, that we need to know on that first date or even before a first date that this is our person. And I just want to even the playing field right now to say that a lot of times, you're not going to know that, okay? And so here's what I recommend doing. How can I actually date? Where do I actually meet people? Where do I begin? Well, I had the moment a few years ago where, again, I was trying to date differently. But I'm going to be honest. I had this idea in my mind of who is it going to be. I had a very specific type. And my type, if I'm being honest, and I'm going to be really candid with you, had to do with being a worship artist, having, you know, leading a Bible study, looking a certain way, having being a certain height, wearing certain kind of clothing. My type was very specific. And I'm going to be real, that those qualities, if we are thinking about it truly, those qualities don't really matter to God, right? He cares about each of us individually, but like, he doesn't care if I end up with somebody that wears skinny jeans and that worships on the worship team, right? What he cares about is somebody's character. And so I had to basically think about, I was dating my quote unquote type for 10 years, and clearly that was not working for me. I was not making the best decisions. So I wonder if my type is not exactly in alignment with God's type. Okay. And so before we get out there and date, we really have to expand our mindset on what this looks like. I read a book a handful of years ago at the same time. My friend handed me a book from Dr. Henry Cloud. It's called It's called How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. And he basically makes this analogy to a girl who says, you know what? I'm done with dating. I've given up. I am just going to wait for God to bring somebody to my doorstep, right? I'm going to wait for God to bring that person because there's no good guys left. And he basically said, okay, so unless you're going to marry the FedEx delivery guy, I don't think God is delivering your perfect man to your doorstep, okay? So he was like, instead, what I need you to do is consider that you need to be actively open to the process. If you think you're ready to date, if that is something on your heart, you have to be actively open to it. And you maybe need to change what you're looking for. Now, I say that with a caveat because I do believe that we should have certain qualities that we're looking for in someone. Absolutely. Yes. But what I just said about my type, which is what most people go off of, you need to start questioning the quality of your qualifications. Qualifying this person for me to say yes to this date because they're a worship leader, because they dress a certain way, because they're a certain height? Or is it because I know they're a godly person? Is it because they are intentional and they ask me in and out in an intentional way? And that speaks to my heart, right? What are the qualities of your qualification? And for me, that looks like having a few character qualities that are really strong and really solid. And if I notice any of those character qualities at all, then I'm going to probably say yes to going on a date with someone. Now, let's just take this a step further, that a date with someone does not have to be a marriage proposal, right? A date with somebody could be a 90-minute interaction with that person. 90 minutes. Keep it short, people. Everyone goes on these 6-hour long date extravaganzas for the first date. And I just don't think that's wise. I think if you want to really get to know somebody, it should be through time. It should be over a period of time. And I think if we have too long of dates in the first date, it has the ability that we feel bored and we feel trapped because it's so long, right? Or we end up learning too much about that person and making judgments on that first date without truly knowing the story behind the things that person is sharing. So we need to go on 90-minute dates. A friend of mine says this, and I now share it in my own dating life because I do this so often. Her name is Stephanie Mae Wilson. But sometimes when we're on date A, we're on the first date, we're at starting point A. At starting point A, sometimes we like to jump to Z, right? We're at A and we start thinking about Z. Am I going to marry this person? Are they my man or husband or wife? Like, we start thinking about Z. But I want to challenge everybody on a first date. You just want to ask enough questions to know at the end of the first date, do I know enough information to want to go to step B, which is a second date? That's all you're asking yourself on a first date, okay? Do I know enough to say yes to one more date? You don't have to marry this person. You don't have to kiss them. You don't have to do anything. You're just getting to know a brother or sister in Christ. And you guys, if nothing happens, you still can be friends with this person. This is why I also don't kiss on a first date or any of the first dates for that matter. And I don't let them be 6-hour dates because then you're getting too attached to the person. So let's have better boundaries and just have dates that are intentional, but that aren't putting so much in them that makes us connected or too connected or too easily disregarding them because we're judging too much about them on a first date. Does that make sense, Adam? There's a lot to
Oh my gosh, seriously. I need all of this in 2003. by the grace of God, I ended up with an amazing wife, but this would have been helpful information. It's so true. I think those long dates, you either do get bored or you feel this emotional connection that's much deeper than anything based in reality. It's like,
oh yeah,
no, you are feeling emotions way before any reality there. Like, you know, that's such a good thing. So I have time for two more questions. The first question, I ask this because I feel like I hear it from singles. I feel like I'm ancient when I say this. I'm 38 years old. I think it's so much harder to date now than it was for me when I met my wife, specifically in the area of sex. I just it almost feels like what I'm hearing from the single crowd, like, it's just a norm that you're going to have sex with somebody. Like, the norm is just like, of course, like early on in the relationship, like even between two Christians, like, you absolutely are going to have sex soon. Mm. What do you do with that? Like, how do you, if that's how my relationships have been in the past, what's your word to challenge me, or what's your word to breathe life to me? I see that in a lot of the single crowd of like, no, it's, hey, Adam, it's kind of a norm now. Like, even between Christians is what I keep, that phrase, even between Christians, is when I hear so often.
Oh, that is so true. There's a book by Jonathan Grant. It's called Divine Sex. And it's a great, great book. It has a lot of research in it. But in it, he does share that in the evangelical church, 69% of unmarried evangelicals have had sex within the last year. And so that's a really large number. So what you're saying is absolutely true. And the statistics are showing that that is true. And so I think this is a very complex dialogue, right? So I'm going to try to figure out, again, my SparkNotes version answer, because there's so much to say on sex and sexual desire. And first and foremost, I do want to say this. Sexual desire is a good thing. I think that that's beautiful, that God created that. He created man and woman, and there is beauty in the way he created us. Sexual desire is good. And I want to say that first and foremost, because I do think over the years, there's been a lot of messages from churches and books out there from the past. I won't go naming names, but that so have kind of distorted that to say, you know, and that we almost as Christians are scared of it. Like, oh, this is a bad thing.
Evil, right?
Don't engage in anything. Don't even touch that person's hand. And I can say that because I was a part of that culture with my 16-year-old boyfriend, and I was fearful. I was like, what happens if I do touch his hand? Oh my gosh. Like, you know, like, and sexual desire is a beautiful thing. So if you are feeling, if you feel things, that's good. Your body is working. Okay. It's healthy to have a sexual desire. That's good. God created it that way. But what I want to encourage everyone to do is, I do think that we as a church, as church leaders, have a responsibility to share why behind our sexual ethic and what it is, because I believe why people are having sex and or why people feel so much shame about what is happening in their sexuality is because we don't truly understand the picture of the beautiful sexual desire that we have and why we should be stewarding that well for marriage, right? We don't understand that. We just kind of understand this legalistic system. Don't do this, don't do this, da 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 da. And so what needs to happen is we need to debunk that. We need to break it down. We need to understand it better. Because I believe truly, Adam, without a why, a true, deep, connected why, we won't be able to walk healthily.
That's right.
If someone tells me, don't do this, but like, I have no idea why, then there's a chance that I'm probably going to end up doing that thing at some point. If I'm not connected to why I shouldn't be doing it, and not in a why that's scary or shaming or like, don't do this because you're going to be damned forever, right? Whatever. But rather than that, which is obviously an extreme example, I've never heard a pastor say that specifically, but you know, instead of that, instead of feeling afraid of our sexuality, and not acting out because we're afraid of it, we need to come into the true deep understanding and breaking it down to understand why this is my sexual ethic, why it is a beautiful thing. What does God say about sexuality and our sexual desire and sex within marriage? And why does he want me to protect that? And I think that that comes out of an outpouring of respecting and honoring myself because I respect and honor my own body, respecting and honoring God first and foremost, and then also respecting and honoring the other person. But again, if I don't understand why sex is beautiful and why I respect myself, want to respect God and respect other person, I'm not going to be able to walk that out well. And I'm not going to feel that much conviction probably in the process. And so that's what we have to do. I actually go into this far deeper in my book that comes out next February. I do a whole chapter on sexual rejection and how I think that our sexuality has been rejected in many ways, both from a church perspective, but also just individually, how we've kind of like shut down ourselves in many ways. And we're stuck in shame and hiding. And so I break it down. It's a lot to break down in one chapter, but I break down, how do we do this step by step to be able to ultimately have a healthy, beautiful, solid sexual ethic, and then be able to walk that out confidently? Because when you are passionate about something and you believe it, you walk that out.
That's,
you know,
right.
Like you really do.
No, that's Kate, that's so good. I'm literally didn't even get to the questions I had, like, to start, and now I have like 15 more. Kate, so here's the answer to all the questions. Go subscribe first off to Kate's podcast, Heart of Dating. And then you need to go and pre-order a copy of her new book. Tell us about the book before we wrap up here.
So the book is called Thank You for Rejecting Me, Transform Pain into Purpose and Learn How to Fight for Yourself. I thought that was how do you encapsulate a book that's all about rejection, which is a heavy topic. So Thank You for Rejecting Me has a hidden message that I believe in every rejection, there is a protection, there is a hope, there is something to learn, and there's a way to redirect us into a better, a healthier, healed path, and that rejections are going to happen to us throughout our life continuously. They will. They were going to continue happening. But how do we build up enough strength in ourselves, in God, and left love for ourselves, resilience, so if rejection comes, it is going to prick us, but it's not going to take us down entirely.
Yes.
And so this is a process and a journey that I take the reader on that really is just breaking it down into the top rejections that I believe happen throughout life. And I am sharing lots of intimate stories, many things I've never shared before, but we talk about abuse, betrayal, abandonment. We talk about body image rejection. We talk about sexuality. We talk about heartbreak. We talk about failure at work and in life, being rejected in that way. So we talk about feeling like God is rejecting us when he's not answering our prayers, you know?
Yes.
And so we talk about a variety of rejections and how to find purpose in the pain of that rejection and then fight for ourselves within it. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So go again, pre-order a copy of the book. Kate, I can't say it strongly enough. This was delightful. Like, I'm like, we need to bring you to Sioux Falls and do a series on dating at the church here, because that was...
I love it.
That was so good. Again, grateful for you and just your voice and even being someone who's so encouraging, even though I don't necessarily fall into the kind of your heart sweet spot. You're someone who's encouraged me even through social myself. And so I genuinely mean that. Thank you for being the person you are and the leader you are and just the follower of Jesus you are, because it's contagious. Like it's impossible to not be curious about the Jesus that you follow by looking at your life. So again, just so thankful for you today.
Adam, thankful for you. Thank you to everybody listening. And I am so thankful for just like the ministry that you lead, Adam. And you're just one of the most genuine people. I said this to you over an email, but I'm like, you just have a radiant spirit. So thank you for having me on. This was a delight. You made me feel on top of the world. It was easy to talk to you, so I appreciate you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.